Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone, hitting the links with you on a Saturday morning. This is Talking Golf with Virgil Herring on 104.5 The Zone.
Good morning. Time to talk a little golf. And you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Got a packed show for us today. At the bottom of the hour, Justin Thomas is swing coach, JB Holmes swing coach. Matt Killen will be joining us on the driving range, the Orca driving range, to help us with our game, shed a little light on what makes the greatest player so special. We have, at the end of our show, almost like a public service announcement, Nashville or Davidson County's Attorney General will be joining us, Glenn Funk, to... the district attorney, yes, will be joining us to discuss a legal happening this week that I believe is important for us to go through, as well as Nugent joining us at the 15 to write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning. But joining me now, PGA Tour player, getting ready to take on the Champions Tour, getting all his prep work in, Doug Barron. Doug, how are you today, buddy?
Man, I'm good. Virgil, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, I know you're getting ready to play, but I wanted to kind of bounce a couple of things off of you.
Sure.
Real quickly, you know, this is a big year for you, where you stopped teaching golf and got yourself prepped and ready to go take on the 2.0 version of Doug Barron's playing career. And I spoke with you recently, and it looks like things were going good. But golf's got a really funny sense of humor. Just when you feel like you are you're riding into the sunset with the guns blazing, golf will put you right back on your saddle. You know, it's been a great run for you. You're starting to feel very confident. Talk to us about the ebbs and flows of golf and how our listeners out there can learn from what it is that you're experiencing while trying to chase the dream.
Well, one, you know, I didn't play competitively really for 5 years, Virgil. And that, you know, coming back in, it has been kind of ups and downs. My first three tournaments went kind of smooth. Then my last tournament, two tournaments ago, I shot 66 in the first round. Then the wind blew like 35 the next day, and I shot 82, and I missed the cut after being third place, which I'd never done in 20-something years of golf. And then the last tournament kind of struggled a little bit, shot 71, 78. So the thing is, I'm walking off the course kind of happy, though, believe it or not. I mean, when you've been out of the competitive arena, people don't understand just golf and competitive golf. I believe everyone should play a few tournaments a year where it means something, just to see where their golf game really is. And, you know, I know getting nervous again and all that stuff has been great for me, and I'm starting to get comfortable. And now it's just a matter of being patient and going through your processes, learning to breathe again, learning to, you know, understand when your hands are shaking that it's a good thing, and it's, you know, you can still perform. And, you know, so some of the things I didn't do for a long time. So it's been kind of cool. I know there's a learning curve in it again, but I'm playing against all these 21-year-olds, and you know, this week I'm coming up to play in the State Open, so it'll be a nice event, I think, to play. So I'm looking forward to playing the Grove this week. I love that golf course.
Well, one of the things that I know as we get older is that we gain a different perspective on what we had in the past.
Sure.
And so when you spent, you know, 4 or 5 years coaching the game and coaching good players,
yeah,
and you're passing on the knowledge that you got and were taught, especially at the highest level, what did you re-implement that you may have wished that you had done when you were in your 20s and 30s?
Well, when I was on tour, I mean, I was very hard on myself. So, I mean, I may shoot a 75 one day and just, you know, my wife would be the first to say I was miserable to be around. Or, you know, before technology, when you had to call your wife on Fridays to let you know if you made the cut or missed the cut, you know, she was always like dreading, you know, the bad news. So I've learned to not take myself so seriously anymore. And that's the number one thing. But I guess I try to not take golf too seriously either. Cause even though when I think I have it, shoot, it comes up and bites me again, you know? So it's kind of, it's like, if you don't take yourself too seriously, and it's like this week at the State Open, I'm playing pretty good golf, but I'm like, this is not really the goal. The goal is to be ready for the Champions Tour. So I'm trying to find ways to make things not so important, because I think we all put excessive stress on ourselves when it comes to golf, whether you're the weekend golfer, a tournament golfer, or what else. You know, so the biggest thing I see on tour, a lot of these guys have made a lot of money, and they're in the spotlight all the time. I don't see Ricky Fowler looking stressed out. He handles himself well. I'm just talking about the top players, Dustin Johnson. I'm sure they're, you know, throwing up inside, but they've learned to not make it so important. That's the thing that I get out of it most. So.
Yeah, no, I love that, because I think that is something that we get.
Well, you talk about a lot with the focus band too, you know. Yeah. So. Yeah,
I got two people that I want you to comment on. One is Webb Simpson. Webb, 193rd in total driving, has not really done anything worthy of note since they changed the putter ban.
Sure.
And although he has won a U.S. Open, how does a player go from basically having no confidence, and he played very poorly the week before, to winning maybe on the hardest golf course? How fleeting is confidence, and how can we kind of put a lid on it so we can kind of hold on to it for a little bit longer?
Well, just knowing Webb a little bit, sorry, there's a plane flying over. Just knowing Webb a little bit, one, his faith, I can remember missing six cuts in a row and then finishing fourth. I think he has a great faith in the Lord, for one, and he's got a strong character, too. He's got a great caddy in Paul Sasori. And the thing that amazes me about Webb is, and you know this, he does everything that you and I don't teach. And that's why I'm even more impressed, because, you know, he gets it in a position at the top that's not many people, except, you know, extreme great athletes, could hit a golf ball. And he's won a U.S. Open. Two, the switching of the putter, which I think he should have never had to make that switch. I'm still disappointed in the rules of golf doing that. But, I mean, his perseverance, I couldn't be more proud of him. But his character is what I see the most. I think he just has a strong faith, and I think he's just a fighter. I think his dad passed away from the same thing my dad has, and I think his dad has instilled a lot of good things in him. And and just knowing Webb, he's just a top character. I mean, high quality person. So I couldn't have been more pleased to watch that dude win, because I mean, I think the world of him. So
I find it fascinating. We see it all the time. I have a couple of personal, like, things that I ever think of when people play for something other than themselves,
yeah,
whether it be for loss, for gain. I know that probably my greatest victory as a professional came right after my first son was born.
Cool.
I know when Brant won the Tour Championship, it was after his then coach Todd Anderson's son was in a very serious car accident. When you're seeing that tells us something. And you kind of touched on it earlier.
Yeah.
When we play for something bigger than ourselves, great things can happen.
You know, one of my best friends growing up had a stroke in both hemispheres of his brain when I was on my second year on tour, and he was paralyzed from the neck down. We obviously did a lot to raise money for him, but I had his name on my hat at all times, and I ended up I was kind of struggling with golf. The second year blues when you get out there after being on the rookie of the year ballot and all that, and when that happened to my friend Tommy, man, he kind of inspired me that year, and it got me through, because I was like, man, you can sit here and think about yourself. And that's kind of how I'm putting golf in perspective. I was like, however I play this week or next week, this isn't life or death. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on that, you know, it's not the end of the world when you hit a bad shot or if you have a bad score. I mean, I just birdied the last hole 3 weeks ago to shoot an 82, which I did three times in 20 years, and my fourth tournament out, I shot an 80 on the quite possibly the easiest course I've ever seen. So anyways, that being said, I walked off the course and didn't like freak out or anything. I was like, this isn't that big a deal, you know? So that's golf gets in our brains so crazy. I mean, I guess you got to be crazy to play this damn game anyways, but, I don't know. I think that's why we love it too.
Yep.
I don't think you can master it.
Yeah. You can't figure it out.
Yeah, so I mean, look at that Michael Arnall kid yesterday. Hadn't heard of him hardly ever, and he went out and was 9 under par after 7 holes. That's just unbelievable. So it was so cool.
Yeah, no question. And you know, the one of the funniest guys in sports right now is Club Pro guy.
I love it.
And he put out a tweet and said, how do you ever expect to be a great player when you can't close out a nine?
I mean, I think every golfer follows him now. I mean, I just can't wait for whatever he's going to say next. It's so good. That deal with Scott McCarron about buying the boat was so funny.
I know. He's so great. It. Tiger Woods also is an interesting story right now because he's showing signs that he could win again. He's showing signs that he's still struggling simultaneously.
Yep.
And he mentioned something, and once again, you're right on this boat with him in a different way, though, which is
a lot smaller scale.
but we're still, it's still dealing with the same thing, which is
no question.
Tiger went a very long time without competing and a very long time without winning now.
Yeah.
And he's saying that he finally is able to handle his playing feels while in the event. Talk to us real quick. Like, what would that mean to our listeners?
Well, just like me, I'm not quite there yet. I would tell you my playing feels. I'm getting so nervous that my swing changes on the golf course from what I'm practicing, and that's exactly what he's talking about. And I think you as a teacher and a good player and everybody, I think the swing changes from the range to the course. In fact, I have a great story. Charlie Hoffman used my coach Jeff Smith one day for 3 hours at TrackMan. He said, I want you to take me on the range. I want to see what the numbers say. Then I want to go to the course. I want to see what the numbers say. And he hit 2 more degrees down on the course than he did the range. So it's a matter of getting your feels on the course as opposed to just practicing and playing with your friends. So that's what I'm kind of going through right now. Is like I can feel all these great shots on the range, and I can hit about 80% of them on the course, but those 2 or 3 are killing me.
So no doubt.
I think that's what Tiger's going through. Me on a different level. I mean, I'm kind of like in Tiger in a sense. I would never compare myself to Tiger except that I played out there the same time as him. I struggled with my driver, and I feel like I have that somewhat under control, but it's something I'm always aware of, you know. So, and that's kind of like Tiger. When he can drive it good, he's the best player of all time. So
no doubt.
It's pretty cool to watch.
Well, we're trying to follow you on the road to the Champions Tour. So we'll check in with you every quarter, buddy. Best of luck to you next week at the State Open, and I look forward to seeing you really soon.
You got it. I'm glad I could wake up for you today. I apologize, man.
Hey, man. Life happens. A 2-stroke penalty for being late to your tee time.
I know. I'll see you next week.
All right, buddy.
Bye, thank you.
All right. When we return, Nuge is going to join us. We're going to write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning, so stick around. You are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone.
Hey, Tennessee.
Welcome back, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring. If you'd like to get involved with the show, hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Virgil Tourspin. It's at this time every Saturday morning. We write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning with the founder of Global Golf Post, Jim Nugent. Nuge, how are you today, buddy?
Virgil, I'm doing well. I'm wondering if anybody's going to be listening to us, though, today, because I suspect they're all watching the royal wedding.
Since 5:30 this morning, I think we got like 2 listeners. There'll be an extensive podcast download later today. But you might be right. It's a very, very big day if you're into royalty that really doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, congratulations to them. It's worth celebrating for sure. Webb Simpson, now there's something worth celebrating. A gentleman who's really kind of struggled since his U.S. Open victory, whether it be from the putter ban or just the general game absence. And the week before, really poor play, to then rewrite it on one of the hardest golf courses on the planet with basically a total domination of the field. Hats off to Webb Simpson, don't you think?
No question about it. Really impressive performance, to your point, on a difficult golf course. A home game, though, for him. He lives in Charlotte. He's familiar with the course. But I don't think that alone accounts for the dominance with which he played last week. It was really impressive performance, and he is truly one of the really good guys on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and you could just see how many of the guys on the tour really were excited to see him back in the winner's circle. And generally speaking, that's usually a sign when you have a lot of people sticking around to watch you finish. That's not always the case, for sure. There are some people that probably feel like there's 7 people waiting for him at the 18th hole. Together. So at the end of the day, that's a huge victory for him. Do you see this picking up more speed for Webb, or do you find this to be a one-off?
I have to be honest. I think it's kind of a one-off. I think he's capable of winning again and maybe several times in his career. But in the modern pro game, he's just a little distance challenged. It is, you know, when you think about it, surprising that he won on such a big course and that he won in such an impressive way. He's one of those guys. He needs to pick and choose his spots. He's not a dominant player by any stretch of the imagination. What we saw last week was highly unusual, but hats off to him. He won the tournament. He won it in a convincing manner.
Speaking of somebody who is trying to get back in the winner's circle, who really showed signs of we're about ready to see the best of Tiger Woods again, although he rinsed one on 17, his weekend performance on a golf course that he's not really mastered. I mean, he's won twice, but that golf course has gotten him just as much as he's gotten it, at least. Tiger Woods is showing signs that when he can drive the golf ball in play, he's as dangerous as anybody to pick up a victory.
It was an impressive performance by him, and he had to go back to Jupiter, Florida, encouraged with the state of his game. On the weekend, he played really well for 12 holes. He just couldn't quite get it to the clubhouse on Saturday and Sunday on the final five or six holes. But on the whole, I think he has to be very encouraged as we head into the meat of the season. With we'll next see him at Memorial, where he's had great success, and then Shinnecock and on to the Open Championship. So he looks to be getting himself into a position where at either one of the Opens or the PGA Championship, he could be a factor.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where this is going to go, because if he doesn't drive the golf ball well, he has no chance in the world that we live in today. But when he finds golf courses that he can three-wood a lot, like Sawgrass is, he didn't have to hit driver a lot, and when he did this week, he generally played okay with it. But he's really still one of the best three-wood players that we've seen. If we can find golf courses that he can do that and succeed at, and part of it is probably his ego, because there are some golf courses that he could hit three-wood 290 and be in the middle of the fairway, but because there's no reason to only hit it 290, he doesn't hit three-wood, unlike Sawgrass, where kind of you hit it to a spot on that golf course most of the time. And that's why I almost feel like, unless he's sick and like doesn't have the energy to rip driver, which is what I think is going to be the case the next time he wins, he'll be probably fighting some type of sickness. Because every time that guy plays sick, he destroys the field. I think he's won Bay Hill twice while, you know, throwing up on the golf course by like 7 and 10. And he won the Memorial with a 103-degree fever. And that was one of his best showings ever in the bad golf swing era in 2013. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen there, because Tiger Woods winning again would be a nice shot in the arm for golf.
It absolutely will be. You know, he's put in the time. He's kind of paid back his debt to society, if that's the right phrase to use. I think people are over or gotten past his off course behavior. They're just pulling for Tiger the golfer, and I think it would be a good thing. And you know, you referenced the three wood. I'm not quite sure, but I think that lends itself very well to Shinnecock. I don't think that's a bomber's paradise. I don't think he's going to have to hit driver a lot. I think he can plod his way through that golf course with his three wood and maybe even the occasional iron stinger off the tee and do quite nicely. There is a 100% correlation in Tiger Woods between fairways hit and winning. And if he can't find the fairway, he's just not going to be a factor.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. As we look at this week's event, it's being played at the new Trinity Forest Golf Course, and there's just as many people raving about it as there is Matt Kuchar. Really, you never really hear Kuch get negative, and he looked like Colin Montgomery on us with this golf course. What's your take on what's going on this week at the AT&T Byron Nelson Classic and this new golf course, Trinity Forest?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised at the scoring. You know, nobody knew quite what to expect, but I don't think anybody in their wildest dreams thought that it was going to take 3 under to make the cut here. obviously there hasn't been much wind, and this golf course needs wind to defend itself. I think Cooch surprised a lot of us. He talked himself right out of this tournament, and I think he backpedaled rather nicely yesterday with the media and said, you know, I'm older and wiser than this. I'm not supposed to do this. I'm a touring professional, and I should play what they present in front of me. So I think he's regrets some of what he said, and he'll move on for it. I think it's been an interesting test. It's so very different. It rewards creativity, and one doesn't necessarily think that Mark Leishman's the most creative guy on the tour. In fact, he's more of a bomber than anything else. But I think it's been a good test. I think they'll learn from it. I think they'll present the golf course slightly differently next year. But you can't control the wind, and if the wind's down, the golf course appears to be defenseless.
Yeah, I agree. And then we have the 9-under par through 7 holes shot yesterday by Michael Arnaud. And tell me about, like, that had to get everybody kind of, we're thinking maybe 57 if he even had like a reasonably good back nine on a golf course that everybody's kind of shooting up. But he did not close it as he struggled to a 60. But real quick, that's just so amazing, Nuge. And golf is, there are so many Michael Arnauds out there that we don't even know about that are just ready to break through just like this.
Great line. That's the line of the year. Struggled to a 60. I'm going to quote you on that one, Virgil. You know, like everybody in the media center, yesterday I have no idea who this young man is. That was some stretch of golf that he played. And he didn't quite get it to the house the way he wanted to. But when you're 9-under, you got some room to spare. You can post 60. Be interesting to see what he does today.
Yeah, no kidding. Kind of hard to come back from that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then really one of my favorite things this time of year is the Golf Channel's coverage of the NCAA tournament. And we got the women's final going on right now with USC just a little bit ahead of Alabama and USC. I mean, I'm just UCLA. When you cover all of golf, and that's what makes your news platform, in my opinion, the best. What do you see happening in the NCAA for the girls this week?
Well, first of all, I have to point out to all your Vandy friends there that it is the mighty Northwestern Wildcats who have entered in both the men's and women's finals this spring. Not bad for a school where you actually have to go to class, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, form typically plays out in this. You typically get on both the men's and the women's side in the match play. You get the four best teams, or at least four of the five best teams. And then it's just a roll of the dice, you know. Sometimes the best team wins. Sometimes it's the team that people think is third or fourth. But it's so hard to separate on both the men's and the women's side, those top four teams. They're all really good. They've all got depth. On the women's side, the big difference is the fifth player is really good for the four teams that get there. And that can't be said of a lot of the other teams that won't advance to match play, where they tend to fall down as their fifth player struggles to be a factor and can't post a decent score. So I look for on both sides to see the names that we're accustomed to seeing at the top of the polls and the rankings all year long.
I agree. Well, how do you see the front page, the headline for Global Golf Post on Monday morning?
Going a little long on Adam Scott here. Scotty is not in our Open Championship at Shinnecock in a couple weeks at the moment. I think he rallies from 5 off the pace, wins the tournament at Trinity Forest, and it says Scotty to Shinnecock.
Love it. Well, how can my listeners get a hold of the Global Golf Post?
You can get a free subscription to Global Golf Post at globalgolfpost.com. We're published every Monday morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to tell you everything you need to know about what happened in the game, and we're going to make you the smartest person in your regular foursome each week.
As always, Nuge, a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next week, buddy.
Cheers, Virgil. Thanks for having me on today.
My pleasure. All right, we return. We're headed to the Orca Driving Range. So stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Nobody said it was easy. Welcome back, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here at 104.5 The Zone. It's at this time every Saturday morning we make the turn and decide it's a better idea to go to the range, the Orca driving range. And today, like many other times, I'm very fortunate to bring on one of the best teachers in the world to help us with our game, and this was no different. The coach of many tour players, that would include Kenny Perry, J.B. Holmes, and our current number one player in the world, Justin Thomas, Matt Killen. Matt, how are you today, buddy?
Doing very well. How are you doing today, Virgil?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, when it comes to working with some of the best players in the world, I'm intrigued to let you enlighten my audience on some of the things that you could put together between Kenny Perry, J.B. Holmes, and Justin Thomas, among many of the others that you've worked with. Some of the things that you've seen that they all do that even the average golfer may not be able to do it at the highest speed that they do it at, but they could implement in their game and make themselves a better player pretty quickly.
Well, I think there's two different versions of this. You've got your players that are chasing, you know, a good golf swing, and you've got your guys that are really, truly players that want to play well. And all of those guys are very good at predicting their shot pattern and setting up to play the pattern that they've seen in practice and the pattern they've seen historically or the pattern they've worked on. So they play the shot that they are comfortable with in the setting as opposed to getting out there and trying to hit a shot that they're not comfortable with.
Then that right there is so important, because I have a couple of players who are real artistic. They have that, they want to fade the ball here, draw the ball there, and like feel like they should be able to do it at will. And that is really a challenge for people because they believe that that's how the game's supposed to be played. And although that may have been what Ben Hogan did, and to a certain extent, maybe Tiger Woods in his super prime, and he probably dabbles with it a little bit now. Most of the players that we see out there play their stock shot until they have no other choice, wouldn't you say?
A lot of times. I mean, there's a little bit of a mixture, but dominantly they're playing, you know, their predictable shot. I mean, especially somebody like Kenny Perry. I mean, he's hitting the same shot every time. I mean, Justin will work the ball a little bit more. You know, they're all capable of it, but it's definitely less predictable unless you spend a lot of time practicing it. You mentioned Tiger in his prime. I used to have a chance to watch him practice from a distance as I coached another player down at Isleworth when he lived there. And he was constantly going through and hitting low fades, medium fades, high fades, low draws, medium draws, high draws. So it was really something he practiced a lot and took with him into play, and he was very comfortable with it. It wasn't like he was just, like you said, being artistic and pulling it out of thin air. He'd seen the shot enough to know he could pull it off.
Yeah, and that's what makes what I try to pass on to the junior golfers is that they'll generally hit shots that they've only either practiced a handful of times, and then under the biggest stress, which would be maybe an AJGA event or a state championship or what have you, they generally, for whatever reason, will rely on a shot, a critical shot, for something that they haven't practiced. When it comes to helping players learn how to practice, what are some of your favorite methods to get people to practice the important things and not spend any time frivolously beating balls doing nothing?
Well, I think it's really targeting your practicing, planning it out ahead of time. I try to get all my guys, all my juniors even too, to plan their practice ahead of time. Are you going out to work on your swing? Are you working on mechanics? Or are you preparing for a tournament? Because they're very different, as you know. You know, you and I have discussed before in private, you know, that there's a big difference between working on your swing and going and preparing for the shots you're going to have, you know, for the third hole at your tournament next weekend. So I think it's good to plan out ahead of time, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. Is there a specific shot you need to work on that you need for, you know, a certain hole that requires a lower tee shot because there's some overhanging limbs? Or, you know, is there a very difficult, you know, pitches around the greens, you know, that are into the grain or something that, you know, you need to prepare for a tournament? So there's tournament preparation, and then there's, you know, working on your golf swing. They're very different, and a lot of times players have trouble distinguishing and differentiating the two.
Yeah, and to me that is an art form all by itself, because especially if you're preparing for, let's say, like, this is a great example. Last week, CPC Sawgrass is its own unique test of a variety of difficult tee shot angles, green complexes, which are small, coming from pretty awkward spots. And if you're trying to get ready to play that golf course and your game's not where you want it to be, the players sometimes feel like they can't be preparing to play the golf tournament if they can't hit it where they're looking. And there's that dilemma that I would be hearing in the contra argument which is, well, if I'm not hitting it the way I want to hit it, how can I be preparing for the tournament? But there are ways, and that, speak to that.
Well, I think that's a great question, but there is an answer to that. Most golf courses, especially the ones that are designed, you know, with different strategy elements involved, which is most of the great golf courses that we see on TV, but also at your local golf course, there's typically a maximum through line, a maximum right, and a maximum left. So, you know, I'm thinking number 18 at Sawgrass right now. I'm not sure what the numbers are in the book because I don't have it in front of me, but there's an angle you can hit at there out to the right where it's not going to give you the easiest shot and the shortest shot into the green, but it gives you the maximum left and right. So let's just say it's a 220-yard shot, for example. If you hit it on that line, assuming that you've lasered the numbers, you know, you could hit it 30 yards left and 30 yards right and still be in play versus trying to maybe cover, you know, the driver number that's, you know, if you don't hit it within a 20-yard window, you're in trouble. So I think a lot of it's preparing and knowing the course, and if there's not a – you can't hit the ideal shot, there's typically a shot you can play. It may not be the, you know, the best to shoot the lowest score, but it's maybe the most predictable and the most, you know, the best shot to manage your risk.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I believe that there's with so much more information out there about how to manage golf courses, with not so much just like the hyperbole talk of the former tour players or the tour player talking about what they do, but now we got, you know, Scott Fawcett and a handful of others that are actually out there just like showing you exactly how to disassemble a golf course mathematically and basically eliminate risk outside of you can't prepare for a bad golf shot, taking the emotion out of the play, which is really a sneaky important piece to it. That is an important element to the game. And what part do you, as the coach to the tour player, play in that? Do you let that come to you, or do you point that out beforehand?
Well, I try to point it out when we're walking the practice rounds. I mean, most of these guys have a pretty good idea of where they're trying to leave it and what kind of shot they want to have. I try to just kind of think outside the box and maybe some alternate scenarios. You know, if they don't hit it exactly where they want, or maybe, you know, they're on the right side of the fairway hitting to a back left pin and it's a difficult location to get to, you know, what are the other options that they could just have in their mind when they get up over that shot? So I try to pick out just different areas where I feel like that there's a possibility they could be there, or maybe it'd be helpful to hit a couple shots from.
And one of the things that we're headed toward now is, like, we have a bunch of back-to-back-to-back big events. We had the Players' Championship, next to have the U.S. Open. Then they have to kind of change everything and get ready for the wind and the cooler temperatures of the Open Championship, followed by the PGA, FedEx Cup, Ryder Cup. So it's bang, 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 bang going through. When you're getting ready to prepare your players now for Shinnecock Hills, what are some of the things that the players will be generally doing? How far in advance would they be doing a practice round at Shinnecock? And when do they begin to get themselves ready for the U.S. Open, maybe even while they're getting ready to play an event prior to that?
Well, I mean, a couple of the guys may go and play early. I'm not sure of their plans right now. I haven't discussed it in detail yet. I mean, there will definitely be, when we get there, you know, I'm assuming that it's going to be set up like most U.S. Opens, where we're going to have to hit it high and land it soft. And there's going to be some very difficult shots out of the rough, assuming they let that rough grow up again. So it'll be a mixture of figuring out what you can advance the furthest out of the rough, you know, whether that's a hybrid or a 5-wood or, you know, a 9-iron or a wedge or whatever it may be. I haven't seen the tournament set up for the U.S. Open yet, so I'm not 100% sure. But typically, it'll be more situational type of shots, which makes it difficult. I mean, other than just hitting it as long as you can and being able to hit it high enough to hold the greens. There'll be a lot more thinking on how to manage your way around the golf course, and what kind of shots you can hit out of the thick rough, what'll hold around the greens, what they may even chip with, depending on how short the green surrounds are.
Very true. I've always found it fascinating to get people prepared and having to think that when they're going through their practice rounds that not everything's going to go perfect, and to be able to get out of the box and think about different angles, different places that it might be, and how those things that you do Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday miraculously somewhere along the line save a shot, which then that kind of boosts the momentum because you prepared for it that better than you did before. You get that sensation that maybe this is my week, and those little things are like domino effects that cascade through your round that sometimes bring us to the greatest levels.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. One of the things I always say, the code of the samurai is, you know, expect nothing, prepare for anything. I mean, you can get a bad bounce out there. You know, anything can happen. You want to try to prepare the best you can for all the situations you might face. So if you're hitting it great, I think it's a great idea to get in there and practice some different trouble shots, get in there and visualize the shots you're going to have, even if it's for the win. You know, try to put yourself in all those settings to create, you know, a mindset that frees you up a little bit when you're actually out there under the gun.
I totally agree. Well, how can my listeners get in touch with you and get the information that you have to help them with their game?
You know, it's a good question. I'm currently moving to a new facility next year down in Tennessee. And right now, probably through social media, would probably be the easiest.
And they can find you at Matt Killen Golf?
Killen Golf on Instagram.
Excellent. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us and helping us with our game. I look forward to catching up with you really soon, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Virgil.
My pleasure. All right, return. We're going to have an interesting conversation with our Attorney General here in Davidson County, Glenn Funk. So stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. It's time to finish strong, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. I'm going to do like what I'm going to call a little public service announcement while going over some of the news this week, and then we'll shift off the sad and frustrating and talk about something that we definitely love, which is golf. This week, a very disturbing and sad thing occurred in which Lucas Glover's wife, Krista Glover, got a little bit violent with both Lucas Glover and his mother, and she found herself in jail and got herself in some serious trouble. And I brought on Davidson County's Attorney General, Glenn Funk, and a very good friend of mine. Glenn, how are you today, buddy?
Doing great, Virgil. Good to hear from you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join me out of your busy schedule. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is because I believe that there's a lot of similar things like this going on in the world today. And I believe that both men and women are victims. I don't believe that there's any doubt about that. But there are so many people out there hurting because they don't know what to do. It appears that this one might be maybe a little bit of mental illness that we're unfortunately seeing on top of alcohol abuse. So some people don't necessarily know what to do. And in this situation, I think it was pretty much the same thing, which things can get out of control pretty quickly. When it comes to the services that most cities have in their area, what are some of the things that a person can go through that can prevent this thing from going on, or at least get the proper help when it comes to a situation like this?
This is a tough situation for some of your listeners that might not have been paying attention to this news feed. What happened was that when Lucas Glover got home on Saturday night at the Players Championship, having missed the secondary cut, his wife had apparently been drinking, according to news reports. She started yelling at him, and his mother then kind of got in between the two of them while they were fighting, and then it turned physical where Lucas Glover's wife then allegedly attacked both her mother-in-law and Lucas Glover, and then the wife calls the police. Lucas Glover gets on the line, tells the police they're not needed, but they come anyway. When they come, they see physical injuries on both the mom and on Lucas Glover and end up arresting the wife. He has turned around and said that he hopes for privacy and trusts that the criminal justice system will work, but that he's hoping that his wife will get cleared of all charges. And that's actually a fairly common response in domestic violence situations. One of the things that we've got here in Nashville is we've got a family justice center. And what happens in these situations is we don't always have to have someone get arrested for someone who is in a abusive relationship to be able to get some help to try to get that relationship to become a healthier relationship for both people in the relationship, whether that's counseling, whether that's alcohol or drug treatment, whether that's batter's intervention, whether it's mental health issues. We have facilities at our Family Justice Center. You can call our Office of Family Safety. It's headed by a woman named Diane Lance, who is awesome to work with. And we've got a number of folks that are counselors there that, that can help folks that find themselves in this relationship to where hopefully it can, there can be some interventions before someone gets hurt or before someone gets arrested.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough for speaking on that, because I unfortunately it's happening out there, and sometimes if we can put a light on it in a good way instead of the negative way, I believe it can help somebody, and I thank you very much for doing that. Let's shift to the game we love, and I'm not sure that I've met many people in the world that love golf more than you, Glenn. And I think that it's I wanted to get something that's relative when it comes to golf. And what it is that you do as our attorney general, things can be going along pretty nicely and you're pretty pumped about it. You could be, you know, basically 7 shots lower than normal going through 14. And then 3 consecutive balls in the water can derail what appeared to be a beautiful round of golf. How did golf help you deal with some of the more difficult things that you've had to deal with? And one of them not too long ago that is very difficult and you didn't see it coming. And now you have to do something that is not so fun.
Well, you know, golf's a great game in that it teaches you character and inspires us to be our best. I was out in Bandon Dunes a couple months ago and took a lesson from their instructor in chief out there, Grant Rogers, and one of the things that he likes to say to people, and he said to us in the group, was one person in the group is going to have the best day. And it doesn't necessarily mean what's on the scorecard. And you can choose to be the person that's having the best day. And you know, what you have to do is take what life gives you, what the golf course gives you, what your game on a given day gives you, or on a given hole, a given swing gives you, and then find your ball and play it again. And keep a positive attitude and just keep working at it.
Yeah, I agree. I've been so blessed to spend a lot of time with you and your family, and together we shared one of the greatest days that one could ever have, which would be Olympic Club and then Cypress Point. And that particular instant, we played with your daughter who played at Princeton, Mary. And it was such a wonderful moment because at that time I didn't have kids, or I may have had, well, actually my oldest son may have been very young when we went to do that. But at the end of the day, the father-daughter and father-son, the relationship that you have and how you have it through golf is one of the most beautiful things to watch. Speak to us real quick here about that importance of your life.
Well, there is nothing better than playing golf with your kids. There's nothing better than seeing them develop on the golf course. There's nothing better to help solidify your relationship. That trip to Bandon Dunes I talked about was with my son. I've taken a number of great golf trips with him. I've taken a number of great golf trips with my daughter. The matches that we play are serious. They are fun before the match, during the match, and after the match. Though sometimes we can get a little chippy. I also remember that match at Cypress Point, and I'm proud to announce that I am the family champion at Cypress Point. I might not be the best golfer in the family, but that day I was, and that was a lot of fun.
Forever. Champion. Oh, it's beautiful. Glenn, I'm so glad to have you on the show. Please pass all my well wishes to your entire family, and thank you so much for what you do for our city and our county, and I look forward to catching up with you really soon.
Okay, thanks, Bert. It's great to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. What a great moment that was. I remember vividly with Glenn as Mary, who played at Princeton and was a very, very fine golfer, on the 16th hole, the famous hole at Cypress Point. It was a very, very huge storm blowing in, and it was raining so hard it was unbelievable, and he turned his hat around backwards and had to hit this really hard shot, and he pulled it off to like 5 feet, and it ended up being the critical play because Mary then struggled on the next hole, and he ended up winning. And the ride back to Nashville, or the flight back to Nashville, was one of the funniest moments of my life. And I'll always remember it. And that's what makes golf and families and playing with your kids, which is certainly my favorite thing in the world to do, is to play with my sons, Lucas and Cameron, and all of us together. It's a magnificent moment. This week, I expect to see Mark Leishman a win. He's constantly in the mix in big events. And coming from Australia, playing golf courses that play similar to what we see here at Trinity Oaks, I expect Leishman to run away with this one as well. I won't be surprised if Adam Scott plays well. Like, Nuge said, because he's got to, because he's not in any way going forward when it comes to playing in the U.S. Open. And I just hard to believe that Adam Scott's fallen this far. But Aaron Wise is a very good player and a young player, and we're going to be seeing a lot from him. But then after that, I don't see anybody really making a run at it. I mean, Jimmy Walker's starting to play good again. I know that he's been struggling with his health, but at the end of the day, Martin Leishman brings it home. Thank you for making us part of your Saturday morning, because without you, there is no talking golf. Thank my guest, Glenn Funk, Matt Killen, Doug Barron, and Jim Nugent. Have a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to seeing you next week for more Talking Golf.